Welcome to the Small Church Leadership Podcast, the podcast where we are helping the small church fulfill the big mission. My name's Brian. I am your fellow small church pastor in the room today, joined by some amazing men who happen to be small church pastors as well. I'm joined by my good friend, Reverend Knows Everything in the Whole Wide World, and my other friend, Reverend Super Awesome and Anointed.
So I guess I'm one of them and you're the other one, right?
We're supposed to figure that out ourselves.
Yeah, I know he was pointing at me with super something.
Super awesome and anointed.
Super awesome and anointed. Yeah, my life is dope and I do dope things.
Oh,
I'm Colby, a small church pastor.
And I'm blessed and I'm Joey, a small church pastor.
I love it.
Kind of threw us for a little bit of a loop. Different intro.
I got to mess you guys up every now and then. Keep you on your toes. See if you're following the lead of the Holy Spirit. And you've passed the test. Because everybody knows that my test is the test.
So that's it.
Passed.
That's the one that matters.
You passed. That's the one that matters. So, guys, today is a really interesting day because we're diving back into this topic we've dealt with before on the Healthy Pastor podcast series, Pastors and Depression. When I say pastors in depression, what comes to your mind?
I'm not understanding this. How can a pastor who loves Jesus, who's serving him, have depression? Mm. I mean, pray, read the Bible, get it together.
Come on.
How in the world could this even be an issue among our pastors?
Come on. I'm just wondering, is the quote, now you guys can't see because we're not video podcasting, but is the quote pastor, end quote, is he even Christian?
Yeah,
if he's depressed,
Christian,
I mean,
and have depression.
Lord have mercy, Colby. Why don't you jump in on this one?
So every listener was like, "What is he talking about? He's not being and we are being facetious here a little bit because depression is a real thing,
very much so,
a real thing. And I think that it is something that is being taken seriously more now than it had been in the past, and there's less of a stigma. There's still a stigma. And we talked about this prior to recording that, you know, it's a little more acceptable for a church person to seek help for depression. Not as much for a pastor because of those things. They should be praying more. They should be, you know, trusting the Lord and all those things. But it's more acceptable now than it was years past, decades past. And so I think that depression is something that it is serious and it needs to be talked about and it needs to be dealt with because of the severity, things that it could lead to.
Yeah,
I think is why it's so important to talk about.
Yeah, so we're definitely being facetious on the front end of this. And Joey, believe it or not, we planned that whole thing out that Joey just did there. So, Joey, give him your actor's voice again.
He can't remember.
He can't do it on cue. We've got to be planning out.
He can't remember because he's significantly older, and he can't remember what he said.
Where we're at and what
we're
doing.
What's my name again? So the good thing about being significantly older is he'll forget depression soon. He won't even have to worry about any of the problems of that.
I don't remember if I'm depressed.
Like that. But, yeah, we're being tongue-in-cheek because the truth is for those of you that are out there that are pastors, your ministry leaders, you know how difficult it is to actually be a human. There's a book that we read in a Small Church Leadership podcast here called Replenish by Lance Witt. And one of the lines that just constantly jumps out to me is he talks about how for so long he wasn't allowed to be a human, and he didn't even allow himself to be a human. And folks, when you live there, you're just setting yourself up for a whole world of ministry hurt alongside of depression with that.
Yeah, I went through a situation where some people said some hurtful things with some as they left the
church. We have apologized about that. We're sorry.
It was mean and ugly, and then I got, well, Pastor, you never contacted them. Am I not supposed to hurt from this? Mm-hmm. Is this not supposed to hurt me when they say that stuff?
Yeah.
And I'm just supposed to be smiling and go, oh, because you're the pastor. No, it still hurts whether I'm the pastor or not.
Absolutely.
I couldn't be real with what they were saying against me and to me. I was just supposed to forget that and just be the pastor.
Right.
And I'm not supposed to be depressed.
Yeah, that happens far too often in far too many circles. And unfortunately, I think it happens a lot amongst small church pastors because, you know, guys like us, we don't have an entourage of people that are between us and the people that are often thinking and saying those things. And it's easy for us to, man, take these things personal because we are people. Well, everybody except for Colby. Colby, tell us what you think.
I'm a people.
You are not a people.
I'm a people. I just, like I said in the last podcast, the opinions of people, of other people, don't bother me as much as some people get bothered by their opinions.
For that spiritual enlightened place for me to be.
I know who I am. The people that love me know who I am. So their opinions, they are what they are.
They are what they are. Well, guys, today as we talk about depression, where do you want to go with this? Like, where's our next step from this conversation?
Well, I think that people need to understand that it's okay. It's okay to be hurting. It's okay to be broken. Mm-hmm. 2006, 2007, somewhere around there, I was diagnosed with mild depression. I was still in the military. I was meeting with a counselor in the military. They prescribed me some stuff that I took. And I found a way to work through that. And this was, I was in the church. I mean, I wasn't, you know, really as active. I mean, I guess I was in attendance a lot, but I was kind of newer to that church. And so, but it was something that, and I don't really talk about that a whole lot because it's something that is in my past. It's something that I'm aware of that I can slip into that because I know what I was going through then. And I know how I was feeling, and I know when those feelings start to come back. I know when, you know, I wasn't ever looking to hurt myself or any of that stuff. It was just, I just didn't feel like doing anything. I didn't care about anything. And I think that pastors and people in general just need to understand that it's okay when you're in that situation. It's okay to go get help. I did. And it helped me a lot to get to that point where I was able to go in there and say, hey, listen, this is what I'm dealing with. And the doctor was like, okay, take this survey. And that was like 200 questions. And he came back and he goes, yeah, you're mildly depressed. What? He's like, yeah, let's look at this. And as long as you answered the questions, honestly, this is what it says. Yeah. And I was like, man, well, that explains a lot.
I think, man, that you just said a whole heck of a lot in one word there. And I'll say that word in just a second. But first of all, thank you for being vulnerable enough to share that on this podcast that's going out to tens of people. Thank you.
if I can help one of the ten, that's all.
That's what matters. That's literally what it is.
We joke about it, but still, it is. Yeah. It is still that. That's how important it. I believe this is because pastors, they're out there. They think they're alone. They need to know that
you're not alone. Even if your only community are three knuckleheads that meet in a room and kind of joke around on a podcast. Thank you seriously for sharing that, and I'm going to share a little bit of my story, and we're going to make Joey counsel us through the rest of the evening, but. Here's the word that you said that I think is key. You said, if you honestly answer those questions. Yeah. And for some reason, us in the church, especially Joey and me, we come from a charismatic Pentecostal, come on, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo background, where you're not supposed to speak death over yourself, brother. You don't speak death over yourself. And I'm like, I am not God. I can't create anything with my mouth. I can create a bad day with it, but other, like, honesty is not speaking death over your life. Honesty saying, this is painful. This hurts. I don't like what's going on. I wish that I could die in this circumstance. Now, before any of our listeners out there are like, oh, wait a minute, you're not supposed to say that. Let me read a couple things. Is that cool?
That's cool.
David, the man after God's own heart, in Psalm 38:4, my guilt has overwhelmed me like a burden too heavy to bear. Sounds a little like depression. By the way, he's dealing with the loss of his son in battle whenever he's talking about that. Elijah, I mean, pretty powerful prophet of God, right? I have a friend who went to Israel once and was standing on Mount Carmel where this whole thing took place. I happen to be standing next to him because I was in Israel with him. You see that creative way I did that?
that was good.
But Elijah, 1 Kings 19:4, I have had enough, Lord, he said. Has anybody ever felt that way? I have had enough. Listen to this. Take my life. I am not better than my ancestors. Elijah said this. Jonah chapter 4, verse 3. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me to die than to live. By the way, Jonah's having a pity party because God forgave those evil, dirty, rotten Ninevites. Isn't that how we are in church
world?
That's
a church
world. We build our silos
right there,
and our this and our that. Yep. And so we've got to be honest. And when we're not honest with the pain, when we're not honest with how things are feeling, when we're not honest with the fact that we hope that our ministry would look different than it does right now, and we're ticked off that church down the street seems to be doing better than we're doing right now. And we know that it's not about competition, but let's be honest, guys. Even though it's not about competition, you still want cars in your parking lot. And there's still that other church in town that we're not competing with them, but we're kind of glad when things don't go quite as good for them, right? Like we got to be honest. We've got to be open and honest with what, stop pointing. Okay. We've got to be open and honest with everything that we're feeling. We can't just glaze over it and, well, I'm just speaking life over my situation. Listen, how did we become followers of Jesus? First of all, God drew us in. But second of all, what did we do?
We realized the reality.
Exactly.
Of
and
our
we
sin.
Confess that.
Mm-hmm.
Romans 10:9, 10:10. If you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord, acknowledge your sinfulness, see with honest eyes the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and until I realized the depth of my sin and how much I needed a Savior, I didn't do anything about it. Mm. It wasn't until I dealt with the reality of I needed a Savior that I did something about it. And to be honest and deal with the reality of what we're going through and what we're feeling and get help for that instead of denying it, calling it other things.
Wait. Calling it other things. Unpack that a little bit.
Well, I have a tendency that if I'm going through something and I'm feeling a certain way, I'll call it something else because it sounds a little bit better.
Just feeling bummed out.
Of course.
I mean, that's what we do. We just call it something else, something that is a little less,
something that doesn't have as much teeth to it.
Something that is a little softer and doesn't,
well, I'm just
doesn't
bummed
make
out.
Us look
I'm
bad.
Not feeling good, or it just was a rough day. Well, friends, if you've had a rough day every Sunday for the past 3 years in ministry, first of all, you're in ministry, and second of all, there's a possibility that there's something that you should talk with a little bit more intensely. So, Joey, continue.
So, be real, so that you can deal with what you're really going through and get to the real answers. And deal with the real problem so you can have real change in your life. One thing that I heard too was that they did a study on teenagers, and if teenagers had depression when they were teenagers, it carried over where they struggle with bouts of that as they continued on. And just like you said earlier, once you recognize that, realize what it was, and then now you can recognize it. When it's coming on now in your life.
Yeah, and that's been very helpful because the tools that I got to deal with it then, I've been able to still use now. And this has been, 12, 15 years, something like that. Yeah. And so understanding what caused the depression, what causes it, what brings it back, and then seeing it, I don't know that everybody can, but I can kind of tell when I start to feel that way, when I start to feel that something is starting to wear me down and I just have no desire to get up and go and I just want to be left alone. I can feel that. And one of the things that I do is when I feel like I don't want to be around people, is I put myself around people. Because I know that, especially with you guys, I know whenever I'm starting to feel it. And it, a lot of times it's because I've kind of isolated myself. Mm. I've been too busy to go do things with the people that I enjoy doing things with.
Yeah.
And so, you have to be able to, identify what the causes are and then I got help for it. And the help that I got back then has helped me even through today. Yeah.
So I love that. Let's take a moment and just kind of talk about that. See, we've talked about being honest, and you said you've got to be able to identify these trigger places. There are triggers for depressive episodes, but then there are also symptoms. And one of the symptoms is isolation. That's one of them for sure.
As far as a trigger goes, I don't really know what triggers it in me. I don't know if somebody said something or, if something happened. I don't know what the trigger is. I just know when I can start feeling myself isolating. I can feel myself not feeling like doing anything that I love doing. Mm-hmm. I just want to be left alone. I can feel that.
So if you're out there listening, man, and you're feeling yourself isolating, you're feeling a loss of joy from the things that bring you joy. Like, you know, you've heard us talk before about, like, Colby's a grill master, and if he starts losing joy for that, that's kind of a red flag going up. Me and Joey, we're just dudes, and so Joey likes doing a lot of stuff. I like doing a lot of stuff. Colby doesn't do a lot of stuff. He does all the stuff because his life is dope.
My life is dope.
So if he's ever not feeling dope, then that's a key that, hey, something's not right here. Yep. So isolation is something to look forward to. A loss of joy is something to look forward to. Joey, you got anything that's something to be kind of cognizant of? Or maybe not that, or maybe you've noticed over the long patch of a couple of days or a couple of weeks, like, hey, wait a minute, something's not right here.
I'll get dissatisfied with everything.
Okay. Well, then, man, I wish I wouldn't end this today. I just need to be listening to this one and not talking on it.
I'll get dissatisfied in my marriage. I get dissatisfied in my other relationships. I get dissatisfied with my hobbies. I just dissatisfied with everything.
Yeah.
And when I
notice
that coming on, that's a warning sign. That
okay. And just keep in mind, we're not talking about a bad day. We're talking about a bad stretch. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, like, this is becoming the pattern of your lives. There's a area of brain science that's fairly new. And when I say fairly new, we're talking 20 or so years, maybe 30 years old, where it talks about the idea of neuroplasticity. And basically neuroplasticity is that your brain is kind of like plastic, and it can dig new grooves in it. And the way that we think about what it's been said this way, what we constantly think about, we eventually bring about.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
That's tweetable. That's tweetable.
What we constantly think about, we eventually bring about, because if we're constantly thinking in a certain direction, our brains are digging new grooves, and it's almost like a bridge. The way your neurons and your brains work is when we think of things, we create a temporary bridge. But just like in a good community, if you're going to keep using that bridge every day, you're going to want to build a permanent bridge and not a temporary bridge every day. And so if we're constantly thinking negative thoughts, our brain, because our brain is lazy and wants to save and conserve energy, will just be like, man, I'm not sending the crew out every morning at 4 a.m. to build this bridge to negativity town. We're just going to build a permanent bridge, and that way it'll be that much easier for neuron A to connect with neuron B. We're going to build a permanent bridge. And so the brain scientists will say what the neurons that fire together wire together. And so, like, if we're constantly in these places where we're responding negatively, it becomes our knee-jerk reaction. If we're in these places where we're constantly feeling overwhelmed and loss of joy and loss of that, that's how our brains have literally changed. That's our new default. And if that becomes our new default, we may need, and we're strongly encouraging those of you out there that are listening, to seek help to help rewire, build some new bridges to some new towns.
Yeah, so I do know that back then when I got diagnosed, I kind of sat back and I evaluated my day. What do I do every single day? And at that point, I was going into the office. I was getting a cup of coffee. I was sitting down at my desk. I was logging on to Fox News, CNN, Yahoo News, USA Today. I was out there. I was getting as much news as I possibly could, and that negativity was eating at me. Mm-hmm. I was surrounded by negative people, mm-hmm. and it was getting to me. And so there was a lot of that. So when I said that I didn't really know triggers, I do know that when I get a lot of negativity in my life, I know that that's going to be something that I have to figure out. Okay, I got to get away from it. And I do. And especially lately, I've been like, you need to change your soundtrack from John Acuff's book. And keep reminding myself of positive things, because the negative things will break you down.
Mm-hmm. I've heard over through this podcast, get help. But can you define, help understand what get help is? What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So my get help is probably more harsh than people want to hear, but I hope you hear my heart on this. Pastors aren't trained to be therapists. No, every now and then there's a pastor that's been trained to do that, and they do therapy and they're pastors. But I don't know about you. When I was in college, I got one course on pastoral counseling, and my textbook was the Bible. Now, I love the Bible, and I believe that the Bible is sufficient. I absolutely believe that there are principles, and I absolutely believe the Bible will help us out with our mental health. However, if you've got a brain chemical issue, you don't need to come see me. You need to go see somebody who can actually prescribe you some medication that will help with that brain chemical issue. So when I'm talking about get help, I don't mean just go to, well, my buddy's a pastor next town over and we meet and we go fishing two or three times a month. That's not help. That's not help. That's helping, but that's not help. So you want to find a good licensed counselor, a psychotherapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. Words are hard for me sometimes, but you want to actually find somebody that's qualified in the mental health field to be able to help you. And so counselors are good. Like, find someone in your local area, Google counselor, like Google, go to Google and look for somebody who can be a mental health provider for you in that place. So that's one thing I definitely want to say.
So a couple of things here that I wrote down as far as how to help is, one, your own personal doctor. Go see your doctor. That's a good place to start, because it's private. You go see them quite a bit anyway. So, you know, talk to your,
as you get significantly older.
As soon as you get significantly older, yes. So talk to your doctor about what you're going through, and they will be able to refer you to the people that they recommend. And I trust my doctor completely, or I wouldn't go see them. And right. So if I go to my doctor and I say, hey, doc, I'm dealing with this, and they say, well, I recommend you go see this one, that's the one I'm going to go see. The other thing is I don't know about you guys, but I've got a list of Christian counselors that if anybody comes into my office from my church and they say, hey, I'm dealing with this, can you help me? Well, I'm not a counselor. I tell people straight out, I am not a counselor. Because like you guys, I had one class 6 weeks long that told me about counseling. I got more training on counseling in the military, right. But that's not the kind I can use here. Right. So I have a list of counselors, Christian counselors, that I will give them and say, okay, go see these people. Pastor needs to use that list on their own. They need to, hey, I need to go see one of these Christian counselors.
Yeah.
So why doesn't more pastors go and get the help they need? What is y'all's opinion of that?
Man, there's a bad stigma. Like that's how we open the show this time, by you being kind of sarcastic and about, well, wait a minute, how can somebody be a real pastor and have depression? That's a real place where we live, where people, unfortunately and fortunately, pastors are put on a position. They're kind of elevated. And we always say to not elevate us, but that's just part and parcel of what comes along with the territory of being a leader. You know, if you're gonna lead the band, you gotta face the music. And so we're all facing the music in front of people. So I think one of the things that's difficult is we've encountered those well-meaning church members or well-meaning blog posts or sometimes not so well-meaning that have been like, well, all you got to do is pray more.
Yeah.
Or how can you be a Christian and be a pastor and a minister, but you're dealing with depression? Don't you believe the stuff you're saying to people? Like, absolutely, I believe what I'm saying to people, but you don't know the story of what I'm dealing with currently. Like, so I think that it's very difficult because we often face a lot of backlash whenever we start suggesting that we need help.
So I'm taking off June this year. I say taking off. I'm going to be at church some, but I'm backing off way and getting some rest. Mm. After 14 years of pastoring there, I'm actually taking some time away and had my dad come to me and go, are you really taking a month off? Why are you doing that? Because, Dad, I've been pastoring here for 14 years. If I'm going to do another 14 years,
yeah.
I got to stop and get because get a healthier plate.
I'm your pastor, Dad. Yeah. That's why I'm taking time off. Have you seen you lately? Yeah.
I have to deal with you.
And I just pastored through a pandemic. Uh-huh. That if I didn't open, they were mad at me. If I did open, they were mad at me.
Yeah.
But I think that exposed what's going on in the church. We just didn't talk about it as much. It just exposed because the music's too loud. It's not loud enough.
Right.
It's not the right kind of music. We want more of this music.
Yeah.
It's always something. Always something. You're dealing with two sides that want opposing things, and you're supposed to bring those together.
Yeah.
And it creates this environment that is ripe to produce
it's
depression.
Ripe for anxiety, depression.
And I want to – I know we're talking to small church leaders, but hopefully the non-pastors that are listening can kind of pass this on to their church people. Pastors, We're not taught how to deal with those things in our education.
Oh my goodness.
We're not taught how to deal with the loud music's too loud, music's not loud enough, music's not enough hymns, it's too many hymns. We're not taught any of this stuff. The you can't change the carpet because of it's holy carpet. You can't do these mm-hmm. things. We're not taught that. We're taught how to just basically how to kind of lead a church, but we're not taught any of that stuff, specific stuff. And so when it comes on us and we're like, it surprises new pastors, especially when you come into the small church. And we've joked about it a lot. When you're a small church pastor, you're the pastor, you're the custodian, you're the landscaper, you're the you're everything. And so when you become this pastor, you're not equipped. I don't care what anybody says about their education. They're not equipped for what we deal with.
Well, even if you are equipped, say you're in the military, okay? You're equipped for a war. That doesn't stop the fact that people get shot
That's
and
right.
killed.
That's right.
Whether you're equipped or not. Like, football teams are equipped for the game, mm-hmm. but they still tear ACLs and MCLs. Yeah. Like, so even though there are many cases we're not equipped, the bullets are flying, man. And so it's very, very important for you as a small church pastor and for you that are listening that are not necessarily the small church pastor, but you're just part of a small church. This is difficult.
Very.
And so the question is, are you going to be a load lifter or a load adder to the pastor in the place? And so, Joey, you were asking, man, why is it so difficult for pastors? I think that there's so much that comes with the negative stigma. I do think sometimes we can be a little prideful. And we can think that we can handle it on our own. And for me, I bought into the lie of, man, if I could just get through this week, or if I can just get to this thing, like summer's right around the corner and things will lighten up on summer.
And this will change everything.
And this will change everything. If I can just get to that conference, or if I can just get to this event. And really what we're doing is we're prolonging the pain. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like we just ripped the Band-Aid off, man. Like, say you need help. Find some friends that you can get into a room with, and you can gripe about it on a podcast and let tens of people.
It's very therapeutic.
It's very therapeutic. Yeah. But seriously, like, it blows my mind how we are constantly, as pastors, trying to tell people to not lean on your own understanding and to not try it in your own strength and to trust in the Lord and to submit to Him and to empty yourself. But we won't do that ourselves.
Yes.
Like, You've got to evaluate your mental health. Because here's the thing, guys. This is a long-term issue. I love how you said to your dad, if I don't do this now, I might not be able to pastor another 14 years. So you're saying, I'm taking time right now that's being criticized by someone close to me,
my dad.
I'm taking time for this now because I care about the future longevity of myself in this ministry. And so maybe you need to go get counseling. Maybe you need to take medication. There's no stigma in that. And listen, for the people that think that there's a problem with you taking medication in your church, I usually have strongly worded opinions. And before these, I'm often told that I should watch my language. So I will say this. I will watch my language and say, for those that have problems with you taking medication, may the Lord bless them and keep them and cause His face to shine upon them. Is that user-friendly enough?
That is user-friendly enough,
bless
yeah.
their dear soul.
God bless them. God bless them.
And you've used the example all the time about high blood pressure or diabetes or something like that. It's okay for people to go take the medication for those things, but you're not allowed to go take the medication for depression.
Right.
And that is an issue. That is a problem. And, you know, it is something that, it's okay. It's okay to go get that,
right.
to go get that medication and God bless them.
Like the same on the lower extreme, like, well, why do you have an air conditioner in your house?
Mm.
Why do you have modern plumbing in your house? Like, if you really love Jesus, you'd be going to the outhouse like my granny did, back, right? Like, why you got that air conditioner? Don't you trust the Lord?
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit, the word in the Greek, pneuma, that in the Greek, that and the P is not silent in the Greek, for those of you that are judging me going, it's supposed to be pneuma. No, the P is not silent in the Greek, okay? But that means wind. Don't you trust the wind of God? You don't need an air conditioner. Like, it's foolish. Like, stop. The Bible says no foolishness, all right? Come on.
And this may not be as much of an issue if the Christians in our church acted like Christians.
Including me, though.
So, yeah. Us too. We're in the same boat. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right that,
Bear one another.
Oh, man. Because I don't know. When I first became a pastor, I thought I could help people, and I thought I could fix them. So yeah. I did counseling, and what I found was a lot of their issues became kind of on my heart. Oh, like yeah. they were dealing with things, and I all of a sudden was trying to.
You took off?
Not just during our sessions, but even after, I was like really feeling this. How yeah. can we? And I was thinking about it all the time. And
the heart
and
then of the pastor.
Yeah, right. and it was great to have that. But then I had to figure out, I'm not them. I'm not dealing with what they're dealing with. So I don't need to take it on. I don't need to. Yeah. I don't need to live with it. And so that was a big change for me in the pastorate, was to realize that their issue is their issue. It's their issue difficult. Is not my issue.
Mm-hmm. It's so difficult because we're empathetic people. And the problem with empathy is what you got can get in me.
Hmm.
And it's pastor, small church leader, please, please, please take care of yourself. You've been serving so many people and you've been doing it very faithfully and very well. And I mean, even you, Joey, you've been doing good too. take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. We ain't worried about the timer. We go over all the time. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm at
the beat. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think, and one of the things, so I had contacted a friend of mine and I said, hey, we're doing a podcast on pastors and depression. And he goes, wow, that's pretty heavy. And I was like, yeah, it is. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're offering assistance. We don't want to just tell them that, hey, you may have depression. What can we do for them? And one of the things he recommended was prior to trying to be proactive to it was a spiritually or emotionally healthy leader by Pete Scazzaro. He said that he recommends that book to leaders because of just how it prepares you moving forward. And so I just wanted to throw that one out there as well. And the other thing is get a coach. I told him, I said, well, I wanted to say that, but I didn't want it to be self-serving because I'm training to be a coach. But it's, he's used Church Answers. I've been in contact with a small church pastor. They have a coaching, network that they have, but getting a coach and a coach isn't somebody that's just going to bark orders to you like a football coach. And they're not a consultant. They're not going to come in and tell you how to do things. They're going to listen. They're going to, help you through the things that you're dealing with. And so, I think a coach is very important to be able to, deal with a lot of things because we deal with a lot of transitions in life. We deal with a lot of issues, different things happening. I mean, you can go through whether it's your parents are going through health issues and that weighs on you, or your kids are grown now and moving out of the house. And now all of a sudden it's just you and your wife there and you're dealing with that, or your church has taken you far away from your family. So now it's just you way out there in the middle of nowhere. There's a lot of things that are on us. And if we had somebody that was there, if we met with them, even just over the phone every 2 weeks or, every week or whatever, that is a big help in itself too.
Yeah.
And one reason is it's different now than it may have been in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I want you to share your statistic if you don't mind, in just a minute. But our society has changed. One thing I heard on the way over here for this is in the Philippians teaching I was listening to, the guy said teenagers now are dealing with the same level of anxiety that a psychiatric patient in the 50s were dealing with.
That's such a crazy, crazy statistic, man.
And so society's changing. There's a lot more pressure on the pastor in an increasingly hostile environment. So there's more on us now than there was before. The people we're dealing with are dealing with more than they've ever dealt with before. And so it carries on to us carrying that too. And it's more on us than ever before. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons pastors didn't get help is because of one of the statistics that you were saying earlier about the ones in the 70s, the perspective of somebody with depression in the 70s and 80s.
Oh yeah, so I was sitting there going, statistic. I talk a lot, so I don't really listen to myself much. But I was like, what statistic is he talking about? No, so what I think you might be talking about is the it was an article in Christianity Today by Stephanie Lobdell. She was writing about pastors who suffer from depression, what Elijah, the story of Elijah, can teach us. And one of the things was that, she was saying that there was a thinking back then that a depressed Christian is a contradiction in terms and very poor recommendation for the gospel. And so many people back in the day, back in the years and years ago, because the pastor that actually said this, he died in 1981. So he was a pastor back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And so when you look at that, so many people think that it's a depressed Christian is a contradiction in term, because you should have the joy of Jesus in you. And so they thought that was a contradiction. And it was, if a pastor was depressed, it was assumed that some secret sin was lurking in his heart. Mm-hmm. If he would only repent, the depression would be lifted. Mm-hmm. And that is not true. Yep. But that was the thinking back then, because they just didn't know. They didn't have the studies. They didn't have all of the technology and all of the medical experts that we have now that have actually done research on this stuff. So they didn't have that then, so they didn't really know what it was.
But to clarify, secret sin may cause depression.
That is true.
That could be, but it's not every case.
It's not every case.
It's
right.
Probably not most of the cases, but... But you need to do the same thing with a secret sin as you need to do with depression and get help.
Yeah.
And we don't before the same reason, because they're going to talk bad. We're not supposed to have this. It's not supposed to happen to me. I'm supposed to be above these things. But the reality is we get these things, whether it's that hidden sin that creeps into our lives or the depression, and we need to get help for either one.
Yeah. So Tom Rainer did an article on Church Answers about pastors and depression. And he said that, you know, these are the top five reasons that pastors are saying that they are dealing with depression. The first one was spiritual warfare, that, you know, that is a true thing. That is real. And, you know, some people out there think it's just kind of kooky, but it is a real thing. And especially when you are in the position that we're in, leading people to Christ, we're under much stronger attacks. When you're on Satan's side, he's not bothering you, right? So the more you're on God's side, the more Satan is attacking you. The surprising reality of pastoral leadership. A lot of people didn't know what they were getting into. They thought they were just going to get rich and work on Sundays, and none of that's true.
Right.
Sense of inadequacy. Preach, right? Mm-hmm. Right there. We know that even those of us that are super confident in ourselves, we still have that sense of inadequacy. Critics and bullies, somebody might have some of those in their churches. And number five, which I think would actually be number one, is loneliness. There's too many pastors out there that are running solo. They're on their own, and they feel like they're on their own.
Yeah.
I know that was me for a long time, Todd. I found you two guys.
We'll hug later.
And have to talk to and to share what nobody else understands, because they're not going through the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the nice thing, and we've talked about this before, Bo, but the nice thing about having you two in my life is I get to be who Colby is. Mm-hmm. I don't have to pretend to be Pastor Colby. You know, I can be Colby. And you can't do that in front of just your church people, because there's a lot of things that we are. And I'm not saying we're going out there and smoking dope and drinking booze and cussing up and all that stuff. I'm saying I can be who I'm. I don't have to be somebody else. I can be who I am.
Yeah.
And I think we need that as pastors. We need those people in our lives that we can just be us. We can cut up. We can have fun.
And for those that are listening and are like, well, the pastor should be able to be himself in front of everybody. That's welcome to the show. Somebody who's never been a senior pastor, right? Like, there is such a thing as healthy transparency. Look at Jesus. Jesus had 12 disciples, but there was also three that he pulled away from the crowd, and those three got to see a different part of who he was, right?
Yep.
Well, what are you talking about? That was Jesus, Brian. Yeah, but the principle is still there of healthy transparency. And so there are only so many things that you, like, if I have an argument with my wife and it gets, like, nuclear, and it gets that place, like, I'm going to share that with you guys, and I'm going to share that with my counselor. I'm not going to get up on Sunday morning when I'm supposed to be bringing the gospel and be like, y'all ain't going to believe this.
That believe what she did.
He believe what she did. Yeah. And I will share healthy transparency. Way in a healthy, transparent way, but man, everybody needs a friend. They need this group of people that know things through who know how to see life through their lenses.
And I've experienced, I not personally, but I have had a mentor of mine who did this. He was transparent to one of his elders in his church. And then that elder used that information against him in a church meeting. And that is why pastors will not be transparent. I've got some really good friends in this church. I love them dearly, but they only get to see about 80% of Colby. Mm-hmm. They don't get to see that other 20%.
Absolutely.
And I love them. They're great people. I just don't show them all 100% of who Colby is.
To the pastors that are listening, this close friend we're talking about is not in your church.
No. Yes.
They're not. Like the three of us, we are very close and we know so much about each other that Joey jokes all the time that he'd have a prison ministry because he'd just have to take me out. But the truth is, like, we don't go to each other's churches.
Yeah.
Like, I'm at my place, you're at your places on Sundays, respectively. We know it's Jesus's place. Please hear us. But, like, that friend is going to be somebody who's outside of your ministry that you're serving in.
The statistic I just run into in one of the meetings I was in is the number one issue regarding COVID-19 facing pastors is recovering from the isolation and the depression. Mm. So, Pastor, you are not alone in this, especially right now in what we're in. There is many other people, many other pastors that are facing the same thing that COVID-19 has brought out because of the aloneness and the isolation. So you are not alone.
Yes.
You are in this together with other people. You're not the only one dealing with this. You're not the only one facing this. Matter of fact, of the three of us in here, we've all dealt with some form of this in different levels and different intensities. Yeah. But we've dealt with this.
Yes, absolutely. So, guys, we've given some really good things today, and this has been a good conversation. We're going to continue to carry this one on into our next podcast. So for those of you that are listening, man, come back with us next week. We're going to continue talking about depression and anxiety and mental health in the pastor. So definitely want you to know, man, we're also going to let you know that you're not weak when you go to get help. That's something we're going to spend time talking about. And we're also going to talk about how to refill your tank emotionally and spiritually. So, man, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. We really appreciate that. Before we go, there are two things that I want to leave you with. One of them is if you've been listening and you've really been struggling with with depression and your mental health, I want to give you the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Here's what I want you to know. We need you in the fight, and we don't want you to feel like you're struggling or suffering alone. And so if you need help, this line is available 24 hours a day. It's 1-800-273-8255. So that's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. You're not weak if you need to call that. If you have no one else in your life and it's struggling and you're struggling to the point where you need help, call 1-800-273-8255 and you can get help there. I do want to leave you with one other thing, but Joey, something you want to share?
Sure, you repeated that number for people who was going to need to get pins.
Absolutely. I'll say it again, and I definitely want you to have that. 1-800-273-8255. And if you can't remember that, just go to Google, man, and type in the suicide hotline, suicide prevention line, and that number will pop up for you. I want to share something from the Bible with you as we close. You hear me do that pastor thing? As we close.
As we close. I got three more points before we close.
Our air traffic control has told us that the runway's a little too busy, so we're going to make another pass around this. Paul the Apostle, who is possibly the greatest leader in the New Testament who doesn't go by the name of Jesus, he was given a vision. He was taken up to heaven, and after that, some pretty interesting things happened. He received what he referred to as a thorn in his flesh, and he prayed for God to take it away. But this is what happened in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 8 and following. Concerning this, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might leave me, and he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I delight in weakness, in insults, in distresses, in persecutions, in difficulties, in behalf of Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong." If you know anything about Paul's interaction with the Corinthians, you know that he dealt with them needing to find their security in the strength according to what their culture says. And Paul constantly talks to them about how true strength is found in weakness. And here he's using himself as an illustration that I had this amazing encounter, but because of this encounter, I was humbled in this place of weakness. And God showed me that his power is not in my vision of heaven, but in me being weak. And so for those of you that are listening and you're struggling with this depression, like Colby was mentioning earlier from that statistic or the way that people viewed pastors, that a Christian who's depressed is an oxymoron, that person should read the Bible. Paul said, man, I am struggling. I'm in weakness. I need God to take this thing away from me. And God said, no, I'm not taking the thing away from you. But what I am doing is I'm giving you grace that's sufficient. And as a result, Paul leaned into that weakness. Brother, sister, church leader, friend, lean into the weakness, for it's in that weakness where God's power can be very, very much visible in your life. That's the heart of the gospel. That is our weakness that God shows up in his power. And so with that being said, we'd like to take up an offering. That's a pretty good place for an offering.
It's a good place, yeah. I like it.
So here's what we're going to ask you in our offering time, Joey.
If you will go to wherever you're getting this podcast and give us a 5-star rating, we would highly appreciate it. And we think we deserve it. You may not think we deserve it, but we do. So just go ahead and give us a 5-1.
I would say today we deserve a 5. Definitely today.
You guys definitely deserve a 5. Maybe I deserve like a 3 today. So I'll ride on your coattails. Okay.
Change your soundtrack. Yeah. So you can hit us up on Facebook at Small Church Leadership. We're going to post that number for the suicide hotline on our Facebook page as well. That way, if you didn't catch it the 3 times that he said it, it's on there. And we're probably going to post a couple other resources out there that you can go to. You know what else is, we're there for you too.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you don't have any friends, message us. Hit us up. Send us a message to Small Church Leadership on Facebook.
We've got so much technology now. We'll FaceTime. We'll Zoom. We'll Google Meet. We'll Absolutely. Hang out. We'll do whatever we got to do to make sure that you have what you need in order to understand that you are not alone in this.
Yes, absolutely. So, guys, thanks for being with us. This is the Small Church Leadership Podcast, the podcast where we are prayerfully and hopefully helping the small church fulfill the big mission. I've been Brian.
I've been Colby.
And I've been Joey.
And we'll see you next time. Bye, guys.